Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with a program that helps you learn American English. We do this by telling you about interesting stories from around the world in a way that is easy to understand. We speak slower than normal and we use fewer words. Today we have two stories from the United States. The first is about water problems in the western state of California. No, not too much water, but far too little. For many people, their lives are about to change. Then we will hear about a new program in New York City that encourages clothing designers to make sure the fashions they design are made right there in one of America's most famous cities. Listen and learn. As It Is starts right now. The state of California is taking steps to deal with dry weather. Governor Jerry Brown announced last week that Californians must reduce their water use by 25% because of a lack of rainfall and snow. As we hear from Ann Ball, some local communities are developing new restrictions on water use.
This is California's fourth year of below-average rainfall since 2012. The lack of rain and snow has created moderate to extreme drought conditions across the state. Bill McDonald is with the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. He says the new restrictions should help.
Right now, we rely on a lot of snow and rain, and that's not happening.
Some of the state's water comes from Northern California. It moves through aqueducts or waterways to the farm-rich Central Valley and water-hungry cities in the South. Farms use 80% of the state's water to produce much of the nation's fruit, vegetables, and nuts. In general, farmers are not required to follow the new water restrictions, but many growers have already faced cuts to the amount of water they can take from public water supplies. They now pump groundwater for crops and eventually will face more limitations on using it. Katrin Chappell works for the Public Policy Institute of California. She thinks the public wants even stronger measures to control water use.
Our recent survey asked the question, do you think local and state government is doing enough about the drought? And we saw the majority say no.
Some of the new measures are already in place. Restaurants will face fines if they offer water to people who have not asked for it. Hilberto Satina owns a restaurant in Los Angeles. He says the restrictions will save more than just drinking water.
It's the water, it's the ice, the electricity you use to make the ice, the cup when you get the water, or if you use glasses, the water you use to wash the glass.
Some Californians say they are prepared to help. State resident Nicole Dura plans to cut back on the amount of water she uses.
We could just do what we can. We turn off the water in between brushing our teeth.
Golf courses and other major water users will face new restrictions. Local communities are writing rules to reach the 25% reduction by next year. Bill McDonald notes that California homeowners are being paid to remove grass from their property. He says homeowners are now being urged to grow drought-tolerant native plants and add drip irrigation systems.
And that's the future. That's where we're going, because putting drinking water on a landscape that's ornamental is not a good use of resources.
Other water restrictions will be coming for businesses, public agencies, and California residents. Local communities and utility companies are tightening rules under appeals from the state. Experts say there is no single solution to the state's water shortage. They say education, better planning, and stronger measures can help the state deal with periodic droughts. I'm Ann Ball.
You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. Many of the world's most respected designers create their fashions in New York City. Often those products are manufactured overseas to save money. Now, New York is providing economic incentives to increase manufacturing in the city and interest promising designers to work there. Marcia James tells us more about the program.
In New York City, the fashion industry makes up more than 5% of the total workforce. The industry also is responsible for nearly $18 billion a year in retail sales. Clothing wholesalers, manufacturers, and designers have been operating in New York's clothing district since the 1880s. Bill de Blasio is the city's mayor. He says fashion designers and manufacturers are important to New York.
Not only a functionally key sector of our economy, but one of the most iconic industries in this city, something so deeply identified with the character and the personality of New York City, and we want to make sure it stays that way and, in fact, becomes stronger.
This year, the city will spend up to $15 million to persuade promising designers and manufacturers to create fashions locally. The financial assistance is offered through a program called Made in New York. City officials say eligible businesses must sell at least 1,000 products every year. They also must design, cut, sew, put together, and finish their fashions in New York. Sarah Carson is the founder of one such company called Leota. She says she is looking forward to additional Made in New York production incentives.
Getting that financing as a small business, as a growing business, is really key to expanding my business here, creating more jobs right here in New York, and fueling the growth in the garment industry and in the fashion business in New York.
Leota was launched in New York 4 years ago. Since then, the business has grown. But Sarah Carson says manufacturing in New York has limitations. They include sky-high rental agreements for office space, an aging workforce, and outdated technology.
We lack some of the technology that we need to do the complicated knitting techniques and laser cutting and some of the popular styles that the people are buying right now. You can't make them here.
The Made in New York program provides help to factories that invest in technology and workforce development. To date, the city has approved more than $1 million to eligible factories. Kenny Wong owns a local factory where Leota designs are made. He operates the factory with his wife, Carmen. He says there is not enough fashion manufacturing work to keep their seamstresses busy all year long. To help fix that, the city created an electronic system for connecting local designers with local production centers. Hopefully that means more business for factories and skilled workers. In addition, Mr. Wong could be considered for financial assistance if he invests in better technology. That would position his factory as an even more appealing choice for New York-based designers. From design to manufacturing to final product, clothing made in New York City is good for the local economy. It also makes sure that New York will be a fashion center for years to come. I'm Marcia James.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to VOA, the voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. The goal appeared simple. Require a woman to sit on the board of directors of all companies listed on India's National Stock Exchange. But after 1 year, many companies are still trying to fill the positions. This has raised the issue of how well women are represented in top leadership jobs. Indian lawmakers passed the legislation last year. The rule is meant to ensure gender diversity and bring attention to the issue of women in corporate leadership. The rule requires that women be named to all corporate boards by April 1st. About 150 companies out of 1,475 listed on the stock market failed to name a woman to their boards by that date. And nearly half the companies that did meet the requirement appointed a female relative of a current board member. Among those companies was Reliance Industries. It named the chairman's wife, Nita Ambani, to the board. Pranava Haldia of the market research group Prime Database in New Delhi questions the effectiveness of the requirement. He says his organization thinks that the female relatives will share the same ideas and opinions as their family member on the board. He says that defeats the purpose of diversity. Many companies argued there was a shortage of skilled female workers able to fill the positions. Uday Chawla is head of a professional search company, TransSearch India. It helped some companies look for candidates. He says the difficulty was to find women who had already served on boards. He says more professional companies want women on the board who can add value to the board instead of just meeting a requirement. He says these companies demand competency and experience. Mr. Chawla said there are very few women who have the experience. Others said companies simply did not take the legislation seriously and failed to look carefully. Yet the inability of corporate India to find women to sit on boards has brought attention to the low level of women's participation in top management positions. Catalyst is a non-profit organization that works to build inclusive workplaces. The group released a study that said almost 50% of women in corporate India leave such work between the lowest and middle professional level. In the rest of Asia, 29% of women do. Sachi Irde is the director of Catalyst India WRC. She says one of the reasons women leave is that women in India are mainly responsible for family care. She says companies need to put in place policies to keep more women on the job. And that's the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the years after World War I, new technologies changed America. Technology made it possible for millions of people to improve their lives. It also brought great changes in American society. This week in our series, Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell more about the technological and social changes that took place in the United States in the early 1920s.
Some of the most important changes came as a result of the automobile and the radio. Automobiles began to be mass-produced. They were low enough in cost, so many Americans could buy them. Gasoline was low in cost, too. Together, these developments put America on the move as never before. Automobiles made it easy for Americans to travel. Trucks made it easy for goods to be transported. Many people and businesses moved out of crowded, noisy cities. They moved to open areas outside cities, suburbs.
As automobiles helped Americans spread out, the radio helped bring them closer together. Large networks could broadcast the same radio program to many stations at the same time. Soon, Americans everywhere were listening to the same programs. They laughed at the same jokes, sang the same songs, heard the same news. Another invention that produced big changes in American life was the motion picture.
American inventor Thomas Edison began making short motion pictures at the turn of the century. In 1903, a movie called The Great Train Robbery was the first to tell a complete story. In 1915, D.W. Griffith made a long, serious movie called Birth of a Nation. By the early 1920s, many American towns had a movie theater. Most Americans went to see the movies at least once a week. The movie industry became a big business. People might not know the names of government officials, but they knew the names of every leading actor and actress.
Movies were fun. They provided a change from the day-to-day troubles of life. They also were an important social force. Young Americans tried to copy what they saw in the movies, and they dreamed about faraway places and a different kind of life. A young farm boy could imagine himself as romantic hero Douglas Fairbanks or comedian Charlie Chaplin. A young city girl could imagine herself as the beautiful and brave Mary Pickford. Rich families and poor families saw the same movies. their children shared the same wish to be like the movie stars. In this way, the son of a banker and the son of a factory worker had much in common. The same was true for people from different parts of the country.
In the early 1920s, Americans also began reading the same publications. The publishing industry used some of the same kinds of mass production methods as the automobile industry. It began producing magazines in larger amounts. It began selling the same magazines all over the country. One of the most widely read magazines was the Saturday Evening Post. In 1902, it sold about 300,000 copies each week. 20 years later, it sold more than 2 million copies each week. Americans everywhere shared the same information and advice in such nationwide magazines. The information was not always correct, the advice was not always good, but the effect was similar to that caused by the automobile and radio. Parts of American society were becoming more alike. They were trying to move toward the same kind of life, economically and socially.
Other industries use the techniques of assembly line production to make their goods, too. They discovered that producing large numbers of goods reduced the cost of each one. One company that expanded in this way was the Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company. It was called A&P for short. The A&P was one of the first large American grocery stores to sell all kinds of food. It sold milk, meat, bread, canned fruits, and vegetables, all in the same store. Shopping at the A&P was much faster and easier than going to different stores to get different kinds of food. In 1912, A&P had 400 stores in the United States. About 10 years later, it had more than 11,000 stores. It could buy huge amounts of goods and sell each at a very low price.
Mass production also came to the clothing industry. People began wearing clothes made in factories instead of by a family member or local tailor. Before long, the same kinds of clothes could be found everywhere. Mass production removed some differences that had marked Americans in the past. Prices dropped, so people with little money could still buy nice clothes. It became more difficult to look at Americans and know by their clothes if they were rich or poor.
Social changes also resulted from great progress in medical research. Doctors and scientists reported new developments in the fight against disease. This progress gave most Americans a longer life. In 1900, for example, the average person in the United States could expect to live 49 years. By 1927, the average person could expect to live 59 years.
Life expectancy rates climbed because doctors and scientists developed effective ways to prevent or treat diseases such as tuberculosis, typhoid, diphtheria, and influenza. yellow fever, and smallpox were no longer a threat. One new medicine was insulin. It was used to treat diabetes. A man-made version gave diabetics the insulin their bodies did not have. It cut the death rate from the disease from 70% to about 1%. Doctors and scientists also learned the importance of vitamins to good health. Now they could cure several diseases caused by a lack of vitamins.
Americans in the 1920s lived much better than their fathers and mothers. A man received more pay than in the past, even though he worked fewer hours each day. He lived in a better house with new labor-saving devices. He had a car to drive to work and to take his family on holiday trips. He received a better education than his father. He and his family wore better clothes. They ate healthier foods. The average American in the 1920s had more time for sports and entertainment. He enjoyed listening to the radio and watching movies. He was more informed about national and world events.
Life was good for many Americans as World War I ended and the nation entered the 1920s, yet that life was far from perfect. Many Americans did not have the same chances to improve their lives. Black Americans continued to suffer from racism. Society continued to deny them their rights as citizens. Women did not have equal rights either. For example, they could not vote. It was during this time that the United States experienced one of its worst incidents of public hatred. Many people turned strongly against labor unions and leftists. They feared a threat to democracy. The federal government took action against what it called political extremists. Many of the charges were unfair. Many innocent lives were harmed. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.